Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Gyatam etasya dauratmyam daiteya pasadasya yat tasya shantim karishyami kalam tavat Pratikshata Gyatam etasya dauratmyam Daiteya pasadasya yat tasya shantim karishyami Kalam tavat pratikshata Gyatam etasya dauratmyam Daiteya pasadasya yat Tasya shantim karishyami Kalam tavat parikshata Gyatam non etasya of this tauratmyam, the nefarious activities. Daiteya apasadhasya of the great demon Hiranyakashipu. Yat which tasya of this Shantim, cessation. Karishyami, I shall make. Kalam, time. Tavat, until that. Pratikshata, just wait. Translation. Then there appeared before them a transcendental sound vibration, emanating from a personality not visible to material eyes. The voice was as grave as the sound of a cloud, and it was very encouraging, driving away all fear. The voice of the Lord vibrated as follows. O best of learned persons, do not fear. I wish all good fortune to you. Become my devotees by hearing and chanting about me and offering me prayers. For these are certainly meant to award benediction to all living entities. I know all about the activities of Hiranyakashipu and shall surely stop them very soon. Please wait patiently until that time. Purport. Sometimes people are very much eager to see God. In considering the word Madarshanam, seeing me, which is mentioned in this verse, one should note that in Bhagavad Gita the Lord says, Bhaktiyamam apijanati. In other words, the ability to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or to see him or talk with him, depends on one's advancement in devotional service, which is called bhakti. In bhakti, there are 9 different activities. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Because all these devotional activities are absolute, there is no fundamental difference between worshiping the deity in the temple, seeing him, and chanting his glories. Indeed, all these are ways of seeing him, for everything done in devotional service is a means of direct contact with the Lord. The vibration of the Lord's voice appeared in the presence of all devotees. And although the person vibrating the sound was unseen to them, they were meeting or seeing the Lord because they were offering prayers and because the vibration of the Lord was present. Contrary to the laws of the material world, there's no difference between seeing the Lord, offering prayers, and hearing the transcendental vibration. Pure devotees, therefore, are fully satisfied in glorifying the Lord. Such a glorification is called kirtanam. Performing kirtan and hearing the vibration of the sound Hare Krishna is actually seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. One must realize this position, and then one will be able to understand the absolute nature of the Lord's activities. So, realizing the Supreme Person, that is actually what we're trying to understand. So even the other aspects of the Lord, seeing the Lord's, understanding him, how he's all-pervading as Brahman, how he is in everything, between everything as Paramatma, then this is all dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. And this mercy comes by the association of devotees. Devotees can give that mercy, right? No, you can't get it any other way. There's not a technique to gain that understanding of the Lord. Right? It only comes because we're associating with devotees, and the Lord being pleased with that endeavor and devotional service, starting with, you know, in the association of devotees, he reveals himself. So when that happens, then it works very nicely. So as mentioned here, that this realization is not controlled by the seeming, contrary to the laws of the material world, there's no difference between seeing the Lord, offering prayers, and hearing the transcendental vibration. So just by chanting, one is seeing the Lord, whether you appreciate what you're seeing. Just like, let us say, we take a very, very expensive, one of these unique diamonds in the world, you know, the ones that have names, right? They have histories. People have been fighting over them. Kingdoms have been lost for centuries, right? Those ones. And we show it to a little child, you know, like a 3-year-old. Does he actually physically see the diamond? Yes. But does he actually see the diamond? No. To him, it's just a rock, you know, like any other rock that you pick up in the garden. Just this one's a little more shiny. But picking it up, throwing it halfway across the room and laughing, they'll get just as much happiness out of that as throwing some other toy that they have. You understand? So they're seeing but not seeing. So physically they're seeing, but they're not understanding. So the real point is this understanding. That's the point. That's revealed by the Lord. Otherwise, everything we look at, we're seeing the Lord. But we think, no, I'm just seeing some trees and some buildings and some rocks. But actually, all we're seeing is the Lord. There isn't anything else other than the Lord. But the problem is because we don't have the spiritual vision. Therefore, we feel we don't see. Right? So in the same, when we're chanting the holy name, we're seeing the Lord. Because seeing is not just limited to the eyes. Right? Krishna, he sees with his feet if he wants. It's not limited by the laws here. Right? We have to even know that within the material world of limitation, on this part, of, in this particular, you know, planet, we're the most limited in being able to, you know, quote unquote, see. Right? So many other planets, they have so much greater ability, so much greater understanding and knowledge. Though, of course, they generally have to be reminded about it because they're generally too distracted by their material facilities. But being reminded, they understand. Like in the fight between Dhritarasura and Indra. Then when Dhritarasura starts discussing philosophy, Indra very much appreciates and can relate to what he's saying. Right? But until he brings it up, he's not remembering it. Right? He tends to forget whenever things get too nice or too emotional. You know, in other words, if they're too nice or too bad, then he's in jubilation or lamentation. So that's why it's recommended one avoids that, because getting into that, you forget the Lord. That's the problem, right? So all rules and regulations are always meant to remember Krishna and not forget. If we wonder, why is this rule here? Because it has something to do with either will help you remember Krishna or it'll help keep you from forgetting Krishna. That's what all rules do, right? Depending upon the rule, how indirect they are, then it may take more or less steps to get to Krishna. Like, don't be inattentive while chanting. That's quite direct because you're dealing directly with Krishna. So you only have that, it's a direct step. Does that make sense? But things like washing your hands after going to the bathroom, that'll be more indirect because that is cleanliness, and that's a quality of Brahman, so Krishna is the supreme pure. And why is that? Because he's only interested in the transcendental position of relationship with the devotees. Therefore, your washing your hands keeps you from taking you away from the purity that's required to appreciate the Lord's position. You understand? Or by being in a pure condition, it'll be easier to remember the Lord. Does that make sense? So every rule is only about remembering Krishna or not forgetting him. So that means that any devotee is already seeing Krishna, but it just depends upon the maturity how much seeing they're doing. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, that's why then the devotees as a community are considered special. Because unlimited living entities are there. It's said that as many atoms as there is in the universe, there's that many living entities. That's a lot. Right? So, and of those, very few are human. Right? Most are something else. Right? You know, it's like, you know, we're thinking, you know, 7 billion humans on the planet, you know, it's a lot. But have we ever heard an estimate of how many ants there are or worms? And these are ones we can see. What about microbes? Right? And so you understand? So unlimited living entities, very few are human. Then of those few that are human, very few actually are interested in the Vedic version, that they actually value the Vedic system. Of those who follow the Vedic system, how many are interested in the Brahminical culture itself? Right? They follow because by following, you get benefit. Things work nicely, the relationships are nice. So they're looking more at the artha and kama. They're not looking at the nature of the soul, so they're not looking at moksha. Right? So very few are doing that. Of those who actually do look at moksha, out of the thousands of those, right, then hardly one's going to actually be liberated, right, in this life. And of millions of those, then there's hardly one who actually takes up devotional service. So we see that devotees are very rare. So they are tattvadarshi. The question comes is how much tattvadarshi they are, depending upon their realization of Krishna that is gained in the association of devotees. So that means every devotee is special. But within devotees, then there's more special, most special, like that. So the neophyte is special. Madhyama is more special. Uttama is most special. Right? But all devotees, that's the standard, is being a devotee. So we see here is that they're being that brought out. Krishna is in encouraging them to take up devotional service because they've come to him because of problems, right? They're trying to do their duties, but instead of just doing it in the normal way of the laws of nature, Hiranyakashipu takes them beyond that, right? The fruit trees have to give fruit all seasons of the year, right? Normally they have fruit, then they get a rest, then fruit, and then they get a rest. No, they always 24/7 have to be giving fruit, right? The seasons always have to be nice and pleasant, right? So it's beyond what should be. And so they're coming to Krishna because they're in distress, which means that it's pious. That's good. They're devotees. But they're coming to him to relieve them of the material distress, meaning of the situation they're in, not meaning relieve us from material distress by us becoming pure devotees. You don't see them asking that. Anytime the demigods go to Vishnu, you can guarantee that that item is not on the list. Right, of all the points they want to discuss with Vishnu, becoming a pure devotee is never on the list. It just is not there. But because they're turning to the Lord, they're devotees, so they're special. But Krishna is always encouraging to become more special by being just interested in pure devotion. Because if you're interested in pure devotion, what do you care? You're not giving fruits, you're giving fruits all day. It doesn't matter to you. Because you'll be doing it just in connection to Krishna. You are giving the fruits to be used for Krishna. It's not used for Krishna, then that's another thing. Right? It doesn't get in the way. The tree is giving its fruit to offer to Krishna. Because people don't use it to offer Krishna. Now we don't say, oh, because these fruits are being misused, we will not use any fruits from this tree. Until the people of the world give up misusing the fruit, then we, as a sign of, what do you call it, solidarity with the trees, that we are not going to use fruit until this nonsense stops. Right? But the tree is just giving its fruit because that's what it does. And it's doing it because of the Lord's order and to please the Lord. So in that position of pure devotion, then there's no problem. So Krishna always encourages this. But generally you see the demigods just go to the Lord to remove the difficulties that are there. Means they're devotees, they're going to the Lord, and so that's good, that's pious. It's devotional, but it's a platform of mixed devotion because they're approaching the Lord about indirect activities. Why do they like a comfortable situation? Why do they like the opulence? Why do they like that? They like all those things because technically it's Krishna. They don't know it's Krishna. They just think, just being able to perform my duties is nice. But duties, dharma, is Krishna. Right? A nice situation, the niceness of it is Krishna. So every living entity is attracted by Krishna. Right? Even Hiranyakashipu, he just is thinking, no, it's me. That's the problem. Right? Impersonalism thinks, I'm the supreme, I'm the center of attention. Right? That's the problem. But when we see it as, no, we're not the center, Krishna's the center, then everything starts to go very, very nicely. Then we perform our duties, it'll happen when it was, because as the Lord says, please wait patiently until that time. He knows what's going on. So the point is this, whatever is going on in our life, Krishna knows. Then it's just a matter of patience. until Krishna rectifies. So technically, as is pointed out, is that the devotees don't have to go to the Lord for material facilities, because he knows what your situation is. He knows your mentality. He knows what you need. Right? Let's say you're a cow. He knows you need grass. Right? Does that make sense? So he'll provide, but it's just a matter of when will be the right time, because it's about becoming Krishna conscious. So if we're Krishna conscious, then we're not worried. And if we always have, it won't distract us. And if we never have, it won't distract us. Right? So in other words, we'll be perfectly situated. Then we'll be peaceful. That's the whole point. That's the peace formula, is understanding it's all Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Right? He's the enjoyer, not us. So whatever situation we're in, the enjoyable aspect, that's for Krishna. So in other words, and he's the one who's actually the friend of everyone. So when we're in a situation, then the intelligence, as explained by Narad Muni, is going to look for what are opportunities to enjoy. Right? Because our connection with everything is through the senses. Right? With the intelligence, we then find what things we can do with our intelligence in any particular situation to get profit, as we would value it by the mind and by our identity, our ego. Right? So the devotee uses that same intelligence to find what is of value, right? Then chooses things to do, to use, based on the identity or the ego that I'm servant of Krishna. So technically, what you do does not change. That's why Prabhupada says you don't have to change anything. Right? Means we take it simply, you don't have to change the external. But actually, all external comes from internal. So you don't have to change the mind, the intelligence, and the ego, right? The elements. You just have to change how your perspective of them. Are they for me or are they for Krishna? That's the choice. That's where tatastha comes in, right? We're on the border. Do we use it for ourselves and in Maya and illusion, or do we use it for Krishna in the transcendental position and in affection? So basically, is it lust or is it love? Right? That's what we're changing. But the mind is still going to choose. The intelligence is still going to analyze. The identity is still going to give the final stamp of approval. Right? Means because I'll do something because of my identity. Right? Let us say we have some very nice aristocratic elder ladies, and they're walking along, and they see some kids playing in the street. And they're having fun, right? They're laughing. It's really going nicely. Now, they might think, wow, that looks very attractive. That looks very nice. That looks fun, right? But are they going to join in? No. Why not? Because of their identity. But you have another bunch of kids from the same neighborhood. They see the fun and the laughing and that. They see this looks good, this, but because of their identity, they'll join. You understand? So depending upon our identity, we choose what to do or not. It means the mind is making the choice, not the identity. But how we've defined ourselves, that's how we will choose. So if we see ourselves as devotees, we will choose according to that. If we see ourselves as some other upadhi, we will choose accordingly. If we think, oh, we're Westerners, or we're modern, or, you know, I'm this, or I'm that, I'm, you know, tall, or I'm short, then we'll choose according to that. But the point is this, no, it's about the senses can be engaged in this way. Why will we notice it? Right? If there's a particular opportunity for sense gratification, why would we notice it? Right? Does that make sense? Let's say I put a very nice, very fresh, crisp, perfect apple on the table there. Okay? We see it, we think, okay, something to eat. Something nice. Right? But now a dog, there's the same apple. Will it notice the apple? It'll see the red thing and then immediately move on. Because dogs don't eat apples. It just does not come in. It does not compute. You know, just like if we have a pile of, let's say, you know, lug nuts on the table, we're not going to go, wow, that looks tasty. You understand? So according to our senses, we therefore will see. So if we're seeing opportunities for sense gratification, that's because we have the nature to engage the senses in that way. Now the question is it for us or is it for Krishna? That's the question that comes up. So that we see the opportunity, that's not the problem. That we don't see it connected to Krishna, that's the problem. Does that make sense? You know, just like, okay, here's something attractive. So then one sees. Okay, so here's something. Now how that should be engaged in Krishna's service. So now the question comes is, okay, it being engaged in Krishna's service, within the definitions of my duty, do I have a connection with that? Right? I go to the market, I'm buying vegetables, I see some nice vegetables. Then I can go, oh, those look nice. Then I can think that'll be nice for Krishna. Does that make sense? But let's say it's something that's not ours. We're not the cook. We don't know how to cook. Then we'll think, wow, those are nice for Krishna. You know, hopefully, you know, somebody will cook those for Krishna. You understand? Does that make sense? So we'll choose which is ours or not, depending upon what's defined as our duties. Does that make sense? And because we have a tendency to be biased in our own favor, that's why the Shastra gives opinions or the definition of what is our duties. Because otherwise, as far as us, if we're going to get any profit according to what we'll think, we'll take anything. But the duties are defined that, you know, does that make sense? Otherwise, it becomes a problem. Like I saw once, somebody got on the stage, it means the whole, you know, troupe is on the stage, the scene is unfolding, and then the main point, main, you know, how you say, delivery for the actual lead actor was about to happen. And instead of them doing it, someone else preempted them by, they started saying the lines. Right? And everybody turns and, what are you doing, right? You know, because there's something to be, you know, that the main actor is supposed to say. But someone who's in the side actor, it was in the moment, you know, because the actors, it's all about, you know, the feelings. So it was just, I just felt, I just, you know, was inspired to say it. But does it make for a good drama just because he was said it so feelingly? No, it's not his duty. That's why it says, do your own rather than someone else's. You may feel, you may this, that, it may be a great moment. But it's about Krishna, not about us. Because remember, when we say we're not this body, we can do anything. 108% of that consideration is that I can do anything that I like. Not that I can do anything to please Krishna. You know, and if you think 108's a little low, I just picked it because it's an auspicious number. You could say 110% if you want. You know? In other words, that choice, is it about Krishna or not? So we see the demigods here, they're seeing situation in which now they become Krishna conscious, but they're not seeing it in connection with pure devotion. They're satisfied with their mixed devotion. And that's it. Right? They're not making a good thing is they're not making a philosophy and preaching that mixed devotion is the standard. So at least they're not doing that. But by their endeavor, by their thought, that's what they're doing. So Krishna keeps encouraging the demigods, no, take up your devotional service. Every time they come, he'll make this statement. Demigods don't catch it. They're encouraged in devotional service, but they're satisfied in their mixed position. So Krishna will arrange everything. And those who are serious about devotional service, then this whole pastime, they'll see it in connection with pure devotion. And they'll see the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. Because we see, in this whole story, the glorious one is Sri Prahlad. Right? The demigods feature, because they're devotees, they're dependent on the Lord, but they don't feature in the position of Sri Prahlad. Right? He is going to be thinking of the Lord always, no matter, even if it's difficult situations, he just remembers the Lord, right? Elephants are there to trample on you, you know, pots of oil are there to boil you, tridents are there to pierce you, he's just thinking of the Lord. and the Lord appears for him. Because here we see they just hear a voice. Right? But here he personally appears. And not only personally, he appears according to how the devotee has said. Right? Hiranyakashipu, is he in this pillar? And he says, yes. So he is there as Brahman and Paramatma. And he sees Brahman and Paramatma as Krishna. So he'll always, even seeing the pillar, he'll remember Bhagavan. So as a unique thing that we've never seen before, that as Bhagavan, he appeared from the pillar. And that was because Prahlad said. Right? And then he's dealing after he kills Hiranyakashipu. And that then is Sri Prahlad who can engage with them very pleasantly, very sweetly. The demigods are fearful because they're worried. Well, now he just, you know, he removed Hiranyakashipu's options for enjoying the material energy, you know, very, how you say, definitively, right? So they're a little in anxiety, will he remove it for us? They're not worried he's going to cut them all in half. He's just, you know, will he take away our facilities? But then when he calms down and he's peaceful and Lakshmi comes forward, then now they can relate and then everybody's happy. But we see as the star of the show is Sri Prahlad, not the demigods, right? They're the supporting cast. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah? Yes. Okay, so our eagerness to see Krishna should be to understand as by the grace of the devotees, by the grace of the Lord, and we may see him through the eyes of pure devotion. Otherwise, we're already seeing, but we're not taking it very as seriously as we could. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, we're seeing more like the demigods and less like Prahlad Maharaj. Right? So our prayer should be, we see like him. Right? Then the seeing is very good. Yes? Any questions or comments or yes? Here he has this little mic.
Maharaj, thank you very much for a very interesting and enlightening class, Maharaj. You were saying one of the points that we should distribute pure devotional service without any discrimination, like a tree, which brings forth many fruits without right. bothering about whether it is utilized properly or not.
Yes.
At the same time, we see that it is said, don't throw pearls to swine, you know, don't throw pearls to
you
swine.
You use your intelligence. In other words, you apply the principle that applies for the situation. Right? Does the tree have control what's done with the fruit? No. So therefore, can it complain? Can it be worried? It does its duty, even if no one else cares. Right? But if you're in a position that you can make a choice, okay, do we go to this program here where in 1 hour's program, hundreds of people will be inspired and benefit, or do we go to this other program where maybe someone will get inspired or not, but you know, it's pretty sure that they won't because last time we went, no one really cared. Then you take the one that will be more inspiring. But if there isn't anything else, then you go out and try. Maybe out of that crowd, maybe one person will get some Agyata Sukriti, and then maybe next time it'll, you understand? So if you have the choice, then you take what will be the best in Krishna consciousness, because it's about Krishna.
Maharaj, thank you, Maharaj. At the same time, I see that sometimes we become very calculative in making sure that our energy and time are focused on something which will produce great fruits for Prabhupada's movement.
That's fine, because the fruits are for Prabhupada's movement. What's the problem? See, you understand? Means what we were saying in the middle of the class about that we're not changing what we're doing, we're changing the perspective. So in other words, if someone can calculate very nicely and they understand the science, what by doing what gets the greatest result, why they wouldn't use it for Krishna. Right? It's when you drop down into the mundane, then all these qualities can be thrown around whimsically. You know what I'm saying? Just as we please, because they're not connected to duty. What makes the difference between theistic morality and atheistic morality. Theistic morality means it's based on Shastra, Guru Sadhana and Shastra, that in this situation, this is how you would apply that particular quality. And therefore, that with that quality goes a particular endeavor, right? There's a quality. It will get you a result. It has to be dealt with in a certain way, right? Because the mind deals with qualities, right? It's subtle. It deals with subtle. The body and senses, that deals with the gross stuff, okay? So that's going to remain. So that's theistic, that in this situation, this is what you do. This is how you consider. This is the viewpoint. Atheistic means it's defined according to modern popularity. So this modern of what you see in the news, what everyone's talking about, what you see on, you know, twittering around, that's atheistic. And sad to say is it doesn't matter whether a devotee uses it or not, it still is atheistic. It's not because the devotee's touched it, then automatically it's theistic. They're engaging an atheistic thing in Krishna's service. But we have to remember, because of the atheistic aspect, it will give some aspect of atheistic result. Right? Just like if I cook potatoes, okay? I cook them not for Krishna, or I cook them for Krishna, I'll still have potatoes at the end of the cooking. Now, I use them for Krishna, then that's nice. I don't use them for Krishna, then it's not. But I'll get potatoes. So in other words, if I use these modern political systems, it will create a political environment. If I can maintain that all in Krishna's service, great. But can everybody function in a political environment and keep it all above board? No. That's why then there's recommendations of what you use where. So within administration, within the administrators, if they use the political field, fine. But as soon as the common person uses the political field as a lifestyle, right? Just as an example, for a Kshatriya, is politics a lifestyle or an occupation? Occupation. But when devotees talk about being politically correct, is it a lifestyle or an occupation? It's a lifestyle. That means they 100% misunderstood even what the karmis are doing. Even the karmis don't think it's that. At least not the ones that are successful. Political it's a tool, it's used in politics. Just like pots and pans are used in politics. I mean, used for cooking. It's not that, it's a lifestyle, it's an occupation. So when we start viewing the eternal irreligious principles from these modern atheistic perspectives, how will it benefit anyone? No one will benefit. Right? Administration is supposed to create peace and security. But in the 20 odd years of using political correctness as a lifestyle, is there greater security in this movement? Do we feel more satisfied and more like this? No, that means it is not, it's being misapplied. So that's atheistic. That's the problem with atheism. Even though we're using Krishna's service, it still will carry the atheistic flavor. That's of all the material. He's the one who actually made everything work the way he wanted, how he wanted it, fully, nothing short. And he's not satisfied. So therefore, why take... And he's big time, right? These modern people, they're not big time at all, right? Krishna's not going to come down to kill them. Right? Modes of nature will get them anyway, right? You know, no problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. So why follow them? Why use their version? Why use their atheistic perspective? Theistic means it's based on what Krishna says, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Atheistic means it's what's popular and what people feel. Does that make sense? It's a simple definition. We may appreciate it, we may not. We may like it, we may not, but technically it doesn't matter because that's what Shastra says. That's how it's defined. That's what the Acharyas say. That's why then, in this point, Krishna's recommending, therefore take up pure devotion, move beyond all this popular conceptions. But for the demigods, it's very difficult because it's going great for them. And so, you know, who wants to give up a good time? Right. Yes?
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. You were giving a beautiful explanation about the nature of demigods, you know,
yes.
when they approach the Supreme Lord.
Right.
So I often get a question in mind in the Vaishnava Siddhanta, Vaishnava philosophy. We make comparisons to understand which is higher, which is lower. You know, in the course of doing it, how to avoid the offensive mentality towards those who are in the lower strata. Like there is a verse, Parasvabhava Karmani Na Prashansati Na Ninditi. He says in Uddhava Gita, Lord Krishna tells about it.
But the point is, as we started in the beginning of the class, devotees are special. So special starts at neophyte. When someone has Shraddha, that's special. Right? And even before Shraddha, someone who has a Jnata Sukriti, like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we're going by and there's a crowd on the street and one person in the crowd shouts out Hare Krishna. Whatever reason, whether he's joking or whether he's serious, he's the best man in the crowd. So already they're special. Then when they develop Shraddha, that's where special starts. Madhyama is more special than that, Uttama is more special than that, or most special. Right? So if we start with that, then we'll find it works. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then what happens is we have this tendency to take who knows where. Generally, we take it as Uttama is standard, so they're special, right? Then Madhyamas are okay, and Kanistas is kind of like, you know, the wife turns to the husband and says, you know, hey, how come the plastic bag with the canisters in is still here? I'm supposed to take that out. You know, the truck comes at 6 in the morning, you know. You know what I'm saying? This is the problem. So the difficulty comes up is our neophyteness gets in the way of our advancing. So that's why we have knowledge and association, because in those moments that we consider, we go beyond. We're on the transcendental platform. We recognize it. And we think in the proper way. And because of that, Krishna's pleased and we advance. And then those moments become more and more often until they become steady. That's what we're trying to do. That's why a moment here and there is perfect. Otherwise, Indra is Krishna conscious, really Krishna conscious, seriously, for a few moments in the fight with Ritrasura. Most of it he's not, but those few moments, that's a value. We read the story. It's considered one of the major stories within the Puranas. Therefore, in the Puranas and the Veda, it's told again and again, because here you have the discussion of pure devotional service, how it fits into your duties. How you can always be absorbed in the Lord in pure devotion without a desire for anything material and do your duty nicely. Right? We have to admit Dhritarasura did a good job. His duty is to beat Indra's enemy. He attacked him quite twice with a club and hit him. It was glorified and appreciated by both sides of the army because that was a very difficult task. Right? You know, even when Indra, you know, destroyed his weapon and cut off his arm, he's still talking for devotional service. He cut off the other arm, he's still talking devotional service, still encouraging Indra to perform his duties and be God conscious. Right? And then because Indra still is not really seriously using the thunderbolt, then he swallows him, Ritrasura swallows Indra. Right? And so then he thinks, well, I'm supposed to do it. I've done my duty, but I was supposed to be killed by Indra and then go back to Godhead. But because now I've swallowed him, there's, you know, no one to kill me. So he just goes into samadhi and thinks of the Lord and by yogic meditation leaves the body. Right? Even though Indra goes on to perform, you know, special things, comes out of his abdomen and cuts off his head, but he was already gone. You know? So, because of the pure devotion that's there in such a difficult situation and still is being performed, that's why this story is always told. The story of Yudhishthira, then pure devotion, even in adversary, it's still being told. If Yudhishthira was just the king lifelong of the world, would it be the whole Mahabharata be about him? Right? If Ramachandra was always on his throne, and that would the whole Ramayana be there? No, it's because of the adversity. Yes, thank you. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Something else? Yes. No. This way.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the nice class. I was just the first point you said, Maharaj, about how Krishna is revealed in the association of devotees.
Yes.
I was wondering how, you know, we can be in the association but can still have our filters on of the modes of nature, and we can be physically there but may not be taking the association as much as we should be. And so is Krishna still revealed through that association?
How much you're involved, then that's much will be revealed. Because Krishna says as you surrender, he reciprocates. So that you're there in the association, why are you there? Just by accident? You were actually meaning to actually go next door, you know, to the donut shop, but instead you came around the corner and there was a whole group of devotees, and then, oh no. You know, they were supposed to be in the temple now. I timed it perfectly. That's why I came down this way, because generally they're on the other side. And that's why you were there in that association, right? Or you wanted to be in the association. Why do you want to be in the association? Because of its benefit, right? Because of the Krishna consciousness. So you'll get benefit for that much. Now, if you're there and you're not paying attention and spacing out, then during that time you'll get very minimal benefit. That you're there. That's why every devotee is special, because they are doing devotional service because they want to. Now, how seriously they perform the devotional service, how regularly, that's another thing. So Krishna will reciprocate. But they are in devotional service because they see that as the best thing to do. You understand? So the point is why do we have the filters on? It's because that's what we've been doing for its time immemorial. We take pleasure in the modes of nature. Right? Things get really happy. It's quite intense. Okay? How does happiness increase? Does it just, happiness just goes like this? You know, that's the way when you have the board meeting and they want to show, you know, the last quarter, then everything's going like this, right? Isn't it? That's the perfect, or does it go like this? Right? So in other words, it has to go down to go up. So that's why you see is back to back is that moment of jubilation, there's that moment of lamentation. Right? They're back to back. Now if you get through that lamentation, then it goes back into the happiness. That's just how the modes work. That's why we take pleasure in the modes, because they arrange things. They keep things interesting, right? The modes don't let things get boring. Right? Right? So we're comfortable with the modes. But the point is that we have to give up that attachment to the happiness we gain from the modes. We have to be willing to use the situations and engage the modes in Krishna's service and our service, right? Because when we engage the modes in our service, that's illusion, that's sense gratification. When we engage the modes in Krishna's service, that's bhakti. So the problem's actually not the modes of nature. Right? The problem is our choice. Is it, in my perspective, my engaging the body, the mind, the senses, am I seeing opportunities for Krishna consciousness or opportunities for my own happiness, my own benefit? That's the ultimate, that's the crux of the whole thing. That's why we associate with devotees that are more advanced, because they tend to more often, you know, see things connected to Krishna. So even if they're a little more advanced than us, then there's more better, something to gain. Right? If they're the most advanced, then they're always seeing like that, so we'll gain the most. But the point is we associate with those who we appreciate their Krishna consciousness. We respect them for their Krishna consciousness. And by that association, we'll pick up something from them. Does that work? Yeah. So in other words, it's a very serious science that all these things are there. We just generally don't look at these analytical things. Generally are taken as, oh, that's gyan. But then I'll take modern management systems, and oh yes, yukta vairagya. You know, in other words, karma is yukta vairagya, and gyan, that's just forget that. But what does that mean? It means our conditioning leans towards karma. Right? You understand? So it's just a matter we engage our nature. So people are using their intelligence how to best manage the material energy, which is fine, but just manage it for Krishna. And if we think that these modern things are the real deal, that's where we've missed the boat. Because the real deal, you'll see, you know, like well before, you know, nowadays what's the popular thing, right? Systems. How much time it'll be before systems is out and something new is in? And then you've invested all your energy into systems and thinking like that and analyzing like that. And then it's old hat. No one wants to hear all your terms anymore. Right? Like, do people like to hear the word synergy anymore? You understand? So that's the whole point. It's old hat. But the principle of where everything is connected together, that's Vedic. Because Krishna is the law. Krishna is the environment. Krishna is the items within the environment. Krishna is our ability. Krishna is the endeavor. Krishna is the result. Now, if that's not synergy, I don't know what is. And namely, a self-help guru on the planet who could explain that. Just give one name. That's enough. If you took them all together and tied them up, you know, they would not be able to come together to this. And that's right in the Veda. That's second canto. We haven't really gotten to the serious practice of devotional service. We see it being talked about in the sixth canto. It's practiced throughout the Bhagavatam, but it's being talked about seriously in the sixth canto. And then seventh canto with Prahlad Maharaj. Now we're seeing, here's somebody actually acting according to pure devotion. Externally. Priyavrata is a paramahamsa, but externally you think he's a materialist. Prithu Maharaj, he's just another king. But Prahlad Maharaj, no one's going to say he's not a devotee. Even his father says he's a devotee, and that's the problem. You know? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to understand is that the analysis that the Bhagavatam gives is there for a reason, so we can tell the difference between what's pure devotion and what's not. For our benefit. And what is our real benefit? Is that we please Krishna. And Krishna being happy, we become happy. Well, if you use Vox Populi, yes, it will be popular amongst the Vox. You know, like that. But the point is, but we won't be popular amongst Krishna and his eternal associates. So you just choose which group you want to be in. You know what I'm saying? Technically, the time's up, right? Darshan's at 8, no? Yeah, so we should end now. So, sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanand.